We love talking to this guy, Chris Lyons, retired sergeant, Hartford Police. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you. I'm going to talk about some of these fun stories from your career, and thank you for what you've done for us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to get your vibe on this shooting in Atlanta. Did you read any of it?
Well, yeah, I've been following that pretty closely. It's a terrible situation. Any way you look at it, in my career, when I was there, were many times we would chase people for all sorts of stuff, on street crimes, arrest warrants, fugitives, things like that. And, sometimes we'd catch them, sometimes we wouldn't, but we always knew where they would end up. In this situation, I think the officers, they had the guy's car, so he runs away. They had his car. They could have impounded his car. They knew who he was. He had his ID. Get him later. Let me just say this. I wasn't there. I didn't get punched in the face. And, I wasn't involved in the struggle with the guy. I don't know what the officer was thinking. But, he made a tough decision, and look what happened. Massive protests following it.
Right. On top of protests. Like gallons of gas on the fire.
Of course.
And rightfully so. I mean, that's a tough one, right? Shot in the back. Like, it's hard to make a case.
Yeah.
That your life.
Never...
What is the protocol on using deadly force? You'd have to be, your life would have to be in danger, or the lives of others, right?
To use deadly force on somebody, the person you're using it on would have to either cause serious physical injury or deadly physical force on you or a third party, which would mean a citizen. It's going to be a hard one to prove on that. And like I said, in my experience, people run away. Sometimes you catch them, okay. A lot of times you don't, and you get mad, but that's part of it. And you catch them later. I mean, they had all the things they could to identify that person, And
right, let them go. Yeah.
Let them go. In this situation now, with all this strife in the country, to have done that, like you said, gas on the fire, and it just exploded.
Yeah, even on any day that's a bad one, right? But then now with all of this awareness, you think people would pull back, right? In this,
you would think that, you would think 2, 3, 4, 5 times before doing that. I mean, it's something. I was fortunate in my career. I never had to use my gun that way, ever. Not one time. And I was in some pretty sticky situations with some bad criminals. But I always had appropriate backup. I had good people that I worked with. We were able to take care of that situation without using deadly physical force.
That's a tough one. And I think everyone who's protesting got an opportunity to say, see, this is what we're talking about right here,
Let me tell you this one. We had one incident where we had a father and a son in a car, and the father was a gang member we were looking for. He was a gun guy. He was a gun trader, member of a street gang. And my partner and I, Detective Mac Hawkins at the time, we pursued this guy into a dead end. And what the father did was he threw the gun to the 11-year-old boy and commanded him to shoot at us. And he's drawing down on us, an 11-year-old kid, and we're thinking, now what are we going to do? And after a lot of yelling and screaming at the kid, we scared him. He dropped the gun. He went to juvenile court. The father went to jail. But we thought from the minute that kid got out of the car with the gun that we can't do this. We can't shoot this kid because the city would just erupt. We couldn't do it. So we figured out, we used our brains and our street smarts to get out of that. And,
well, think about the amount of time that you had to think about. You have to do the math very quickly in a deadly situation.
To assess everything,
If you think a half a second too long, you could be dead. Your partner could be dead. It's a very difficult situation to be in.
Well, in that case, we had cover. We had cover. We had the guy in a position where he couldn't get out. The kid was a little boy, so we knew we could scare him, and we knew that we could intimidate him into dropping the gun, and thank God we did because we didn't want to do that. But that story, we talk about that story every time we see each other, and it's just – and I see the father. He's out of jail now. I see him every once in a while. Now he wants to be our buddy, so I don't have too much time for him, though.
Is he reformed?
Right. That's something that, as time goes on, sometimes they thank you, right? They're like, hey, thanks. I was a jerk.
A lot of times when you arrest somebody in a situation like that, it's they think it's okay. It's business to a lot of them. A lot of people that are involved in criminal activity, they'll say things like, they will thank you. Hey, thanks a lot. you kept it on a business level. You didn't get personal. And it's kind of a weird way to think, you know, I'm a police officer and this guy's a bad guy and he's thanking me for not you know, clobbering him. And honestly, in my career, I never woke up wanting to do that. I mean, you knew there was a potential of violence or having to struggle with someone or fight someone, but wasn't the first. I never wanted to do that because it hurts. It hurts. And, you know, no matter if you win, you lose because you're hurt, you're injured and stuff like that.
Right.
And,
pants get ruined.
No police officer I know ever wanted to do that. None. And I worked with a lot of guys and women, a lot of men and women in that PD.
One more serious one, and then we'll go on to some of these awesome stories you have. Well, you know, fun.
Sure.
Chokeholds.
Right.
Governor signed an executive order yesterday banning them for the state police. What do you think about that?
Well, you know something? I would never think, forget that stuff. I would never use that stuff. It's sad that you have to spell it out. They don't choke someone out. I find that sad. In my experience, in my career, we never did stuff like that. I mean, we fought with guys. We had people square up with us in fist fight. We had people run, flail. We had people beat us up. And, you know, once we get control of them and cuff them, the fight's over. Never even thought about using that. It's sad that somebody would have to spell out, gee, you don't choke someone, in my view.
Right.
The common sense.
I just think sometimes if you're in a fight, especially with someone much larger than you, and, you know, they might be reaching for your gun, I'm not going to think, all right, I can't do this move and I can't do that move. You know, I'm going to do whatever move I can.
Can you kick them in the junk?
Continuously choke the person until they pass out.
Can't you just kick them in the junk?
You know,
well, it depends on what the... Yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot of times, you know, you think the real big guys are the tough ones, right? It's not. It's the small guys, the 150-pound guys, wiry, muscular, the ones that you can't control. But when someone's grabbing your gun, then you have to do everything you can to make sure that gun doesn't get grabbed all the time. Because if that person grabs that gun, he's going to use it on you.
They're not grabbing it to clean it for you.
Or to throw it away, keep it away from them. Yeah.
Brandish it and show it and stuff. They're grabbing it to shoot you, and that's... And that is what I believe 100% of the time. If someone grabs your gun, they're going to try to shoot you with it. And so you have to do anything you can to prevent that.
I had
those incidents happen to me in my career where, you know, they would try that. But like I said, the backup was so good. And the units I was in, we were so well trained. We defended each other. You know, we had officers that would do the activity. We had other detectives that would stand back and watch the crowd. So I see what kind of threats were coming in from the side. And we were able to, you know, I was lucky to work where I did. A great police department.
I think
you
said something key here. The training that you had was excellent. I see some of this stuff that they're showing in the news, and I think it doesn't look like they were trained.
That's not from a manual. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
No, the training, you know, everybody says, oh, training. Oh, brother, I have to go to training, right? It's what a pain in the neck. But it's so important.
So important.
To continue that training and always use new techniques and to better protect yourself through training. That way, when the real incident happens, you know, you might not do everything picture perfect, but you do the majority of the things right.
Right. All right. We took care of some serious topics before the song. Let's get to some fun ones here. Chaz and AJ in the morning. 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Chris Lyons, retired sergeant, Hartford Police, on the phone. Let's talk about this media ride-along you had.
Okay. Well, you know, the units I was assigned to, it was gang unit, the intel unit. We did a lot of fugitive apprehensions and stuff like that. Pretty newsworthy stuff. And the media was always, you know, interested on riding with us. So when I was in the gang unit, we had the Journal Inquirer ride with us for an entire month to see what the gang unit was about. The Hartford Courant did a lot of that, too.
Yeah.
When I went to the, you know, and we got, they saw exactly what we experienced. You know, we didn't hide anything from them. We did everything that we did, they did, except the dangerous stuff, but they came in right after. So we were able to get a lot of, I don't want to say publicity, a public could have a better understanding through the media's reporting of what we were doing out there than rather than hearing we're out there like cowboying up and, you know, running people down and stuff like that.
So if you went into a dangerous house, you'd have the reporter wait outside of them when things were secure and safe. You'd say, all right, you can come in now.
It's okay now.
Well, generally we would have a detective stay with the reporter while we got in, secured the scene. Then we'd bring them in and we could show them what we were doing. A lot of our activity was search warrant activity. In the one case I was talking about, we had a current reporter, it, she was pestering the chief Joe Crowell at the time, to let her ride with, you know, ride with our unit.
Yeah.
And he was a little hesitant because you never know what's going to come out when a reporter rides with you. But after she was insistent, so he came to me. He says, "Hey, can you take Maria out? Show her, do a couple search warrants with her. Show her what you do." So we did. We took her out. She was a very nice person. We did a search warrant in this place in Hartford called the Casa Verde Apartments, and it was where the Los Solitos were pretty good, big, pretty powerful streak, or a persistent street gang in Hartford. So we hit this place. We were looking for guns and we were looking for heroin, and we hit the place. We secured everybody inside.
That's scary, right?
Like a one-stop shop. You're, yeah.
As you're rolling up,
yeah.
Are you thinking this is the one that could go wrong, or you're not thinking
that
at all?
Situation. In that particular area, it's very compact. There's a lot of apartments. There's a lot of lookouts. People are yelling. When we pull in the driveway, people are running and yelling. So, but there's so much bad activity that was going on there then, they don't know where we're going. But, yeah, we hit the place. We secure it. And then
did you hear that? There's so much bad activity. The bad people don't know which way we're going. Which house are we hitting today?
Right. They're yelling, "Company's here! Company's here!"
It's something that it's tough to believe when you pull into some of these places and you see people running in different directions all over the place, yelling and screaming. And back then they had Nextel, so they would pop the Nextel, and the Nextel would beep throughout the project. You'd hear it going beep, 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 and that was their warning.
There's alarm, yeah.
The police were coming. So we secured the place, we got in, and we brought the reporter in. And one of the dangers, I say, of search warrants, a lot of these places we don't go in are real clean. And when we went in this one particular place, there was flying insects, there was cockroaches all over the inside of the apartment.
And
on the walls.
Activity, yeah.
One of those things our old bosses would tell us, when you get done with that location, when you go to the station, you know, make sure you have a second change of clothes. You don't want to bring that home.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we're in the apartment, we're searching around, and she asks if there's anything she could do to help. So we didn't really want her searching anywhere, you know, in drawers. It could put her in danger. But one of the detectives and I said, "Yeah, go ahead, look behind a cuckoo clock. There's a cuckoo clock on the wall." And I said, "Look behind it, because people put drugs in all sorts of places."
Yes, cuckoo.
Behind picture frames, inside.
Yeah, when the birds go really fast, cuckoo, 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 cuckoo.
All right, at 12 o'clock, the drugs come out.
There's cocaine. There's a clock.
But you're going to have to grab it fast.
Right.
Well, she takes the cuckoo clock off the wall, and behind the cuckoo clock, there was a... like a nest of cockroaches that was in the pattern of the cuckoo clock.
Oh, man.
And she pulled it off.
And then she went cuckoo.
She pulled it off, and she looked up, and then they all dropped on her front. And
my God.
It's raining cockroaches.
So now we have she's running around the apartment screaming and yelling. But, you know, the cockroaches hit her in the front. They're on. So we're brushing them off and stuff, and she got them all out of her, Now all the bad guys in the house start laughing when they see this.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
A little coming together of the good guys
exactly.
and the bad guys. Like,
that was funny. Right? That was very funny.
It'd be
funny that you had there.
It'd be funny if the roaches like formed the cuckoo clock
right.
and did the cuckoo. We're just gonna act like a clock now.
Or
you see some little guy get out
there. I had to remain solemn and try to help her out, so I got her out of the apartment, and you know, she got all the stuff off her, and but it was funny. It was a little bonding moment between us and the bad guys. They were cracking up.
Right.
The guys were laughing. And,
that was funny.
They thought it was pretty funny.
Oh, God.
Chris,
it's a story they can remember and tell when they went to jail. They got out pretty quick. But
we
found guns. We found what we wanted. We found our heroin. We found a bunch of guns.
And
it was very successful for us.
Yep.
All right, Chris, hold on one second.
She wrote us a good article.
On the phone with us is retired police sergeant Hartford, Chris Lyons. And we wanted to ask you about the story of the sister, quotes.
Which one?
A nun?
She wouldn't eat her breakfast.
Oh.
Oh, brother. Okay. Well, I'm in patrol, and I'm a pretty young patrolman. And we get a call on Jefferson Street in Hartford. And I'm with a couple other new officers. We get to the apartment, and this knock on the door. This woman opens the door, a crack. We could just see, like, one eye and her nose. And we say, "Well, what's wrong, ma'am?" She says, "My sister is extremely ill. She's very sick. She won't eat her breakfast, and she's not listening to me." So I'm like, okay. But she won't let us in. So I put my foot in the door so she can't shut it. And she's acting kind of odd and weird. And I notice she's unkempt, and she's like, she's dirty, and, you know, she's wearing, like, this house dress. So we ask her a little more, and she starts to say, well, I'll talk to her. Maybe she'll get better and all this other stuff. So, but something wasn't right about her. So we, you know, we ask if we can go in. She says, sure. Go into the apartment. We said, where's your sister? She says, she's in the next room. She's not eating her breakfast. So I walk in the room with an officer, this guy Joe McSwiggin, who works for the state's attorney's office now, and we see her sister's a skeleton in bed. There's a brand-new breakfast on a tray with a cup of coffee, and then in the bed there's a skeleton, and, you know, the upper half of her body is skeletonized. The bottom was not. And so I had to call my boss and explain how that was. And it was something, you know, definitely didn't expect to see that. And the lady actually was talking to her sister like she was alive and, and chastising her for not eating breakfast. It was a sad situation, you know. We called that one in, and then, you know, then the cavalry came. All the detectives showed up. Our supervisors came, and, you know, we were relegated to guarding the scene. The poor woman, she wound up going to she went to Harvard Hospital, and then I don't know what happened to her after that.
Yeah.
She has lived in that apartment for at least 6 months with her sister deceased. And, you know, it was, we noticed there was flies, dead flies all over the apartment.
But like, flies couldn't take it.
Like, yeah, they wanted the breakfast, though, yes.
Yeah, it was a horror movie. It looked pretty awful.
That is a horror movie.
Yeah, it's bacon and eggs. Yeah, right.
It was like it was a natural death, and the woman was mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
And we definitely didn't expect to see that.
Right.
You know, we expected to see someone who was just, you know, too sick.
No, you think it's a stupid call. All right, so she won't eat her breakfast. I mean, we have things to do, but okay, fine.
Well, we'll go and try and help out. I just walk out and say, she's eating her breakfast now. We're going.
Right.
But I can tell you, police officers, when they go to calls, a lot of times the call that is dispatched out turns into something completely different because either get the wrong information or the proper information isn't relayed. So you really have to be ready for anything. I can tell you I wasn't never ready for that.
No.
And I thought about that a lot throughout my career, and it was just like, you know, the poor woman who was alive was just she was so disturbed, and it was sad.
Yeah. Was it a good breakfast?
Saying goodbye to her sister when she put her in the ambulance and all that, and it was just, you know, you don't want to see stuff like that,
but,
you know.
You know, as a young cop, too, that stays with you forever. I could hear your, it's in your voice now. That's a weird thing to see.
Like, yeah, no lunch for you today, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Chris.
I'm reading the story.
I can tell. Hey, thank you for what you've done for us, and we got to have you back. You have so many, you know, interesting stories. And Chris
Absolutely,
Lyons,
no problem. It's a pleasure for me to be on, and thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. Retired Sergeant,
yeah, you have a nice day.
Hartford Police, Chris Lyons.